Good afternoon. This is Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. If you watch this week's presidential debate, or just about any of the debates over the course of the campaign season, you'll probably agree that these events have not represented the ideal of measured, respectful political discourse. This election cycle, and this country for that matter, are not unique in the direction that political debate has taken, but a Milwaukee initiative is trying to change the tone one dinner party at a time.
The Kantian Dinner Party Initiative is a set of six events in the coming weeks which seek to bring people of diverse opinions together under the guidelines first assembled by philosopher Immanuel Kant. It's being organized by Ryan Hanley, the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, who is with us in the studio to explain. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Mitch. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Why is the time right for these dinner parties?
Well, you know, I think right now a lot of people in our culture worry about the degree to which we're really living in a very polarized moment in which it's very difficult sometimes to hear the other side and to engage the other side. And I think right now there's really a need and a hunger, and a lot of people out there would like to have an opportunity to engage in a very sustained way and not just hear what other people have to say, also to have their voice heard and to have the sort of sustained and extended discussions that sometimes we don't always have spaces for in our culture right now.
So let's take a step back and maybe a very basic step back. Who was Immanuel Kant, and how does his philosophy play into what you're trying to accomplish?
Sure. So Kant was really one of the great philosophers of the 18th century Enlightenment. And so he is living in the second half of the 18th century and active. This is, of course, the time he's sort of same age as the American founders, as it were. But Kant has really become extremely influential for his moral and political philosophy, which gets very technical very fast. But at the same time, it's based on a few concepts that are not unfamiliar concepts to us today. And my students and I that have been working on this project have been particularly inspired by Kant's commitment to several different values. One is Kant was one of the first articulators of what it meant to be enlightened and indeed what enlightenment was. So he wrote a popular piece that appeared in a newspaper on the subject of Was ist Aufklärung? What is enlightenment? And there he describes the difficulties and the courage that we need to be able to think for ourselves, to be able to discuss and to debate in the public sphere. And these are important ideals for us living in contemporary democracy, not just in the 18th century Enlightenment. And so the dinner party struck us as one way of being able to bring these to life. Kant also, foundational to his moral and political philosophy, are several other concepts, and I'll just mention two very briefly.
Sure.
One is the idea of dignity. Kant thought it was fundamental to the human being that because we have these capacities to think for ourselves, to act for ourselves, to choose what is good and to follow it, Kant thought that invested us with what he called a dignity that demanded, and this is the second concept I'll mention, respect, and that human beings, because of that extraordinary capacity, deserved a respect from others, and that they themselves had to respect that capacity within themselves. So one of the things we hope to do is to bring these sides of Kant's project to life, his commitment to an enlightened public sphere, and also recognizing the dignity of other human beings and respecting them fully.
Well, so then how did the dinner party format emerge from this idea?
Yeah, the dinner party was originally an experiment with my students about 3 years ago. In 2013, I was teaching an undergraduate seminar, 15 weeks, all Kant, all the time. and anybody that's read Kant knows that it's tough going.
Surprising that's not a radio format.
And my students, you know, to their great credit, they really slogged through it and rose to the challenge. It was a great experience. But I wanted to give them a little bit of a lighthearted moment and a little bit of a chance to take philosophy out of the classroom. I gave them two options. One was I really wanted them to choose this one, I confess. Skylight Opera was doing Mozart's Così fan tutti. And I was hoping that I could get them down there for a discussion of 18th century views on women and contemporary views of the place of women in society. No one bit on that. Instead, they took up the other little experiment, which was to follow these funny little rules that Kant puts together for a dinner party. And together with that seminar, we got the back room at Karl Ratch's. We went down and we decided to experiment and put these into practice. And we all found that it was really extraordinary, not just as students of Kant seeing his philosophy come to life, but as people that were engaged in contemporary political debate as well.
Well, and so talk about that first dinner party. And was it difficult to get people to buy into the rules, or even if they did buy into the rules, was it difficult to get them to stick to the rules?
Yeah. I mean, one of the great challenges in the dinner party is that there's really high expectations for both the participants as well as the one who's responsible for organizing the party, the host. And when I say great responsibilities, the main thing that one has to, as it were, buy into is really the commitment to, as Kant says, respect others and to make sure, and I really love this phrase of his, to make sure that respect and mutual benevolence always shine forth. And what Kant means by that is, as we listen to others and debate with others, it's often the case that we want our own voice to be heard. And especially when we have strong opinions and we really have the convictions that we're right, it's difficult to listen. It's difficult to be silent. It's difficult to wait our turn. And it's really difficult not just to rebut an opinion, but to listen to someone's argument and to work through it systematically. So the dinner party asks us to do it, and it asks us to do it over several hours of sitting together, of listening, of hearing, and engaging. And that's not something that many of us often get a chance to do. And so it's a new experience. My students rose to the challenge really wonderfully. And I actually really have not just high hopes, but really the expectation that the crowd that's going to come out to the party is going to be able to, I think, wants these sorts of opportunities and will really also not just rise to the occasion, but also really bring a lot to the table and make it a special experience.
We mentioned that there are rules that govern these dinner parties, but we didn't talk about other than the fact that there is a host and that there are participants. We haven't talked about what the rules are. And so can you lay out just how a Kantian dinner party is governed?
Sure. So Kant puts together, there's about 5 pages of text in one of his books called The Anthropology, and he lays out all the rules. And the rules range from in some ways quite funny, to in other ways, ones that you could really see the logic to. And so on the more humorous side, Kant insists, for example, that there should be no background music. He thinks that it's quote-unquote barbarous. And when we had our first dinner party at Karl Ratch's, we did actually turn down the automated muzak in the background to live up to the rules. But so that's one. Another, for example, he insists that there has to be a code of secrecy. What's discussed at the dinner party needs to stay at the dinner party. And as you start working through these rules from these seemingly sort of more humorous to then seeing what the logic is behind all of the rules, you see that really the conversation is the thing. They're all set up to designed to create a space where people can have a sustained and engaged conversation. So, for example, some of the other rules include the size of the party. Kant is very strict about limiting it to no more than 9 guests and no fewer than 3. The idea behind that is to have one sustained conversation at the table, no side conversations that might fragment off. He also talks about the order in which conversation might proceed at the dinner party. And he tells us that there's 3 stages, beginning with narration or news of the day, then proceeding to the German word is Raisonieren or to argumentation, perhaps we would say, but sort of reasoned discussion and debate, and then ending with jesting and lighthearted plays of wit. And, you know, again, when we say this, it sounds sort of funny, but you really start seeing this as it's practiced, that it develops a conversation that begins with people reporting on their individual experiences, the news of the day, what things look like where they're coming from. And then a host, if they do their job right, is able to steer this into maybe seeing some of the debates, the way there are disagreements, but ensuring that there will be respectful engagement, a sustained engagement. Another rule is that there must be no dogmatism. No one should be allowed only to position or to present their point over and over again without engaging others. And then one of my favorite parts of the dinner party, and I think part of the reason for its success, is that last stage, the jesting, the wit. It's really hard after having had 2 hours of debate with someone that perhaps you really disagree with to then sit around and tell jokes over dessert? That doesn't come naturally, but it's a really important part of being able, even if we leave having disagreed, being able to part, having recognized the humanity, as Kant often says, of our fellow diners.
It has to be interesting to be planning this and thinking towards it and then watching the political debate that is playing out in this campaign season.
Of course. And just this week, of course, we're seeing the beginnings of the presidential debate season. And it's no accident. We wanted to have these conversations around this time of year in October and November around election season. And that's really for two reasons. One is because, of course, people have very strong, passionate convictions as citizens. And it's important for us to bring those into conversation with each other. But the other is that the sort of debate that we want to have at our dinners really is very different as we envision it from the sorts of debates that we often see on stage. You know, our debate season from the primaries onwards, oftentimes people are looking for zingers and we really privilege the soundbite. And we often think that whoever gets their voice up the loudest and has the most volume is the one who deserves to have the stage. Those sorts of debates, they might not have, there might be a place for those in politics, but we really want to have a forum for citizen deliberation that takes things down a notch and really focuses on engagement and back and forth rather than simply getting that last word in or getting in that zinger.
How do you ensure that the group of people that comes to a Kantian dinner party has a diverse enough set of opinions that it does not just become nine people sitting around and agreeing with each other?
It's a really great question and one that we're really have been wrestling with from the beginning and working very hard as we possibly can to address. One of the things that we care most about in the dinner party is not reinforcing the sorts of echo chambers we often find today in our social media or other various forms in which people are sort of getting feedback on positions they already agree on and finding that their own ideological bent is being reinforced. We really want to bring in people that have differing opinions. To that end, we're trying as hard as we can to recruit, to some degree, as diverse a public audience as possible. To that end, we're, of course, trying to take advantage of as many different Milwaukee venues as we can. But we've also had the good fortune of partnering with a couple of local organizations who are our formal co-partners on the project. We're really grateful to be partnering with the Zeidler Center of Milwaukee, which already, although it has a slightly different model, has been doing this good work and bringing people together around the table for quite some time now. And we're really grateful to be working with them with our facilitator training and having some of their facilitators indeed at the table as participants for our dinners. We're also really pleased to be working with a couple of other neighborhood organizations. One is really in our own backyard at Marquette. This is the Near West Side Partnership. Marquette has been on a variety of different levels engaged in some more off-campus collaborative neighborhood activities. And we're really proud as the Dinner Party Initiative to be following that and being able to build on some of the very good momentum there. And we're really looking forward to participants coming out from the Near West Side Partners, as well as Core El Centro, which has also been doing some wonderful work here in Milwaukee with wellness and health and serving a variety of different populations. And we're also eager to bring them to the table. We're very fortunate to have funding from the Wisconsin Humanities Council to be able to host six dinners. Between the funding from the council, as well as the generosity of our two restaurant host partners, the dinners will be held at Story Hill BKC, as well as Cafe Benelux, two of Milwaukee's great restaurants. Since we have six dinners, three at each of the restaurants, and we do have a cap on nine participants, it does mean that we are somewhat limited in scope and numbers. We're encouraging people to visit our website and to register, and then we will be drawing participants based on lottery.
So what would you hope that someone who attends one of these dinner parties, you know, goes on for a couple hours, 2.5 hours, what do they walk out the door with?
One thing I hope they'll walk out the door with is the memories of a very pleasant experience. Kant actually thought that the food, the drink, the sociability, these were all important parts of the experience. I also hope that they'll walk out having enjoyed an opportunity to encounter a view that they might not otherwise would have encountered in the course of perhaps their daily day or their business workplace conversations or even their social media. I hope that it's going to be a chance at the very least to be exposed to other views. I hope also, if it goes well, and I think it will, that there will be a chance to engage those views, to not just hear the positions, but to get to inside the logic of the positions, to feel them out. And I hope that people will also have a sense that their voices are heard as well, not just as listeners, but also engaged participants in a conversation. We're not hoping that people will all walk away with a consensus. We're not hoping that people will all come out in agreement. That's not necessarily a goal of the project. If it happens, wonderful. If not, it may be, and I think it's very possible that people will leave even more convinced in their opinions.
And if nothing else, it is not a Hobbesian dinner party, because those are nasty British and short.
And short, indeed, yes. No, this is going to be three courses, so there will be plenty of time.
Ryan Hanley, thank you so much. Best of luck.
Oh, thanks so much, Mitch. It's really been a pleasure.
Immanuel Kant was a real piss, and he was very rarely stable. I digger was a boozy beggar, if you think you under the table.
Ryan Hanley is the Mellon Distinguished Professor of Political Science at Marquette University. He's also the organizer of the Kantian Dinner Party Initiative. The deadline to apply to attend one of the dinner party events is Monday. You'll find a link to the program's website at wuwm.com.
John Stuart Mill on his own free will, on hot one shiny was particularly ill. Later they say, could sing it away. Half a grain of whiskey every day. Aristotle was a bugger for the bottle. Hobbes was fond of his dram. And rainy day Carp was a drunken fart. I drink, therefore I am. Yes, Socrates himself is particularly missed. A lovely little thinker, but a bugger when he's pissed.